We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is WEEI Late Night with Nick Cattles.
We wanted to add competition. We always try to add competition to our team, and we felt like we'd be able to do that. He was very open to talking about and working with our situation. We're able to work things out. I'm glad we have him and look forward to continuing to work with all of our quarterbacks. But Cam's been fun to work with him. Again, we'll see where it all goes, but he's got a lot to work with.
And he is 23, and there's no reason to think about sticking a fork in the back of the Keel Harry. But if you can go from missing 3 days, having a lackluster Sunday practice, to dominating the hell out of everybody on Monday and playing real well on Tuesday, it just makes you look at the guy. You want to hold him, you know, your hands on both cheeks and say, can you do that every day? We really need it.
Puck taken to the outside by Pilon. Pilon is shot, and it went off the glove of Pilon. Wrap around the tip. Rebound, score! It's Pilon! And the Lightning have won in overtime!
Yeah, that Bruins game. Overtime killer stabbed me in the chest. We'll get to that in a little bit. Sports Radio WEEI Late Night on a Tuesday. Nick Cattles with you up until midnight. Red Sox win in Buffalo against the Blue Jays. That's right, in Buffalo, not in Toronto. But I want to start off with the New England Patriots. Yes, the Pats. That's where we start. You know, the quarterback competition, when you look how this played out, was really DOA. This was dead on arrival. It really wasn't a competition. We thought that we'd see Jared Stidham and Cam Newton go back and forth for the better part of, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe even right up to the beginning of the season, maybe not knowing who was going to actually start the first week of the year. Maybe it could be Stidham taking out the older, the veteran Cam. Maybe Cam wasn't healthy. Maybe Cam was healthy, and at the very end, he'd come from behind and outlast Stidham and get that first start of the season. We were all thinking about this glorious, picturesque quarterback competition. And what we got was Cam Newton walking onto the football field and within 48 hours, for all intents and purposes, ending this thing. I said last week, the fact that Cam outplayed Stidham in the first couple of days of this camp told you everything you needed to know. If there was any time that Stidham would be the better quarterback, it would have been the first week of camp, folks. There's really no reason why Stidham would not outperform the new guy the first week of this camp. Cam was parachuting into COVID-19. He was parachuting into a new coaching staff, a new playbook. He was getting some work done on the shoulder and the foot, coming back from injuries and surgeries, both of those areas of the body. And I figured that the best chance that Stidham would look better than Cam would be that first week. And the fact that within 2 days, I was reading on Twitter from everybody, Evan Lazar, Jeff Howe, Greg Bedard, everybody and their mother that was at Foxborough was telling me that Cam Newton was the better quarterback and that Cam had wrestled away the starting gig from Stidham. This was DOA within 72 hours. But don't you tell Bill Belichick, because even up until today, Bill was fighting the good fight.
What caused you to go get him?
kind of what you said, Rich, is that he was available. We wanted to add competition. We always try to add competition to our team, and we felt like we'd be able to do that. He was very open to talking about and working with our situation. We're able to work things out, you know, take it day by day and see how it goes. But, you know, I'm glad we have him and look forward to continuing to work with all of our quarterbacks. But Cam's been fun to work with him. He's got, as I said, a very unique, and he's a very talented player with a unique skill set. Again, we'll see where it all goes, but he's got a lot to work with.
That was perfect Belichick, wasn't it? I mean, what do you expect from Bill? He's going to sit there and he's going to build up this competition. He's going to tell us that he brought Cam in to work with him and we'll see where this thing goes. And maybe, just maybe, Cam will end up being the starter. But hey, it's a competition and we've got three very good quarterbacks. Yep. Everything you expect from Bill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, you've got Bill Belichick saying what he just said to Rich Eisen. Meanwhile, his number one receiver, Julian Edelman, is on social media with the busy thumbs telling us that Cam's going to be the guy, with a picture of him as Batman and, of course, Cam as Superman. So I guess Belichick did not get the message to Edelman that we're trying to at least play this thing as a true legitimate competition, because in Edelman's eyes, this is no competition. In Edelman's eyes, Cam is the guy. Just like everybody had been tweeting and writing about late last week, into the weekend, even before the Stidham injury, Cam did not take this job from Stidham because of Stidham's injury. Cam took the job from Stidham because he was outplaying Stidham at practice. It's as simple as that. Injury, no injury, Cam was becoming the guy. And by the end of last week, he was the guy. So Edelman is just telling us pretty much everything that we knew. Cam is the man. He's the man in New England now. He is Superman. Edelman, hopefully, if he can stay healthy and look young out there, could be Batman. And the Cam plan, let me tell you, it's going swimmingly. I didn't really know what to expect the first couple of weeks. You didn't know how Cam would look. And I know a lot of people were watching those workout videos on Instagram. A lot of people were getting pumped and jacked about how great Cam looked. You know, shooting a video is one thing. Putting together a video for an Instagram is one thing, because you can edit that video. You can make sure that you're doing exercises and workouts that you've done for the past few weeks, that your body is now accustomed to, that you can do comfortably. Maybe, just maybe, there are some things that Cam couldn't do. We didn't know. The videos looked great. He looked like he was in great shape, but we weren't totally sure he was going to be able to step on that field and look like he's looked. And most importantly, he's looked like a healthy quarterback. You know, reading everybody that has gone to Foxborough and has watched these early camp practices, everybody says he looks healthy. Nothing is sticking out to them whatsoever. And when Cam is healthy, Cam's a top 12 quarterback. And I know he's very polarizing, and I know a lot of people, you know, call him a loser. I took a phone call going back a few weeks ago on Hart and Cattles on Saturday morning. I took a phone call from somebody calling Cam a head case. I get that he's polarizing. He's got a certain reputation, and some people think that he's not as good as all the hype was back in 2015. In 2015, he was the best quarterback. He was the guy. You know, in 2015, when he wins the MVP and he carries that team to the Super Bowl, he earned that Most Valuable Player award. That wasn't given to him. He earned that ish. He was the most dominant player week in and week out. Now, was he the same guy in 2020? No, it was 5 years ago. He's had multiple surgeries after multiple injuries to multiple body parts. But he is still, when healthy, a top 12 quarterback. When you look at where offense is going in the NFL, where you look at the 2020 evolution, right, and what we've seen, the dual threat quarterbacks. Now we have Lamar Jackson wreaking havoc on second and third levels of defenses. And we see everything that you can do with some of the misdirection stuff. Cam's athleticism, even if he's not the same guy from 5 years ago, he's still only 30, 31 years old. He's still young enough to make a difference with his legs. If he is healthy and he's moving around great, like everybody is reporting that he is, and he brings that athleticism back into the fold, and he actually has a shoulder that doesn't make his arm look like linguine when he's throwing the football, he's going to be good. He's a top 12 quarterback, folks. He's going to be good. The only question about Cam is his health. If he's healthy, he has that athleticism. And what I would expect from this offense, because you know Josh McDaniels, you know Bill Belichick, they've been talking to North Turner. That's been reported. They absolutely asked Turner what he did in 2018 to make sure that they could prepare Cam to be as good from the pocket as he possibly could be. In 2018, in that first half of the NFL season, Cam was one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the entire league, bar none. Look it up. Check the stats. It's there. The completion percentage was hovering around 67, 68%. This was a guy who never completed, 63, 64% of his passes. North Turner came in. He took over that Carolina offense, and Cam was a different guy. And Cam was more efficient. Cam was more accurate. So I would expect a lot of shorter routes for Cam with this offense. I would expect the idea is to get the football out of Cam's hands as soon as humanly possible, much like the Panthers did in 2018. In that first half, Cam was great. Then he injured his shoulder. He was a different guy. Last year, lost season because of the foot. But if you're telling me Cam Newton is a healthy quarterback this year, I'm telling you Cam Newton is a top 12 quarterback this year. Nick Cattles here, Sports Radio WEEI, late night on a Tuesday. With you up until midnight, you want to have a nice little discussion about Cam, be my guest at 617-779-7937. The telephone number, the text line is also 37937. You can follow me on Twitter at Nick C Radio. Here's another thing. The very fact that Cam won this gig as soon as he did, that's a great thing for Cam. It's a great thing for this offense. Because what it does, it creates time for Cam to work on the playbook and for McDaniels to install certain plays that he wants to install. I've been reading all the reports from Gillette and the idea that the Patriots are calling plays offensively that you would never see them call with Brady behind the center. So they've got to really shoot these new plays into this offense, inject that new offense somewhat to what they've done, build on what they have done in certain circumstances, situations with prior quarterbacks, and then add the Cam flair to this offense. So this gives them more time to do that. The fact that Cam won this quarterback competition, again, DOA within, 72 hours at the most? Because this quarterback competition was DOA within 72 hours, that allows the Patriots to immediately jump into things with Cam and say, all right, now we're going to give him the majority of the reps. Now we're going to work on this offense that is specifically crafted for him. You know, I'm a professional wrestling fan. I'm not embarrassed to admit it. I love pro wrestling. Watched SummerSlam on Sunday night, ate some great Chinese food. It was a good damn time. I also had the Bruins on a screen, so my mind was kind of split, but I digress. In wrestling, when they book for a professional wrestler, which is, how they write up their character and how they handle their storylines, it's an old adage that when you are the booker, when you're leading creative and professional wrestling, that you are to accentuate the strengths and hide the weaknesses. If you are great at creating storylines and protecting somebody's character, you accentuate their strengths and you do away with the weaknesses, right? You protect them from those things they don't do well. So the more time that McDaniels has with Cam as the guy in camp, that will allow McDaniels to accentuate those strengths and make sure that we don't see any of those weaknesses as much as he possibly can. That's his job. Accentuate those strengths and hide those weaknesses. It also gives Cam more time. Chemistry with the receivers. What we saw late last week at camp was Cam started to pull guys aside and started to work with them. He started to work with the Sanus. He started to work with the Harrys when Harry was out there. Thankfully, last couple days, good days for Harry. Very nice. Very nice to read that because I was getting concerned with Nikhil. I really was. Over the weekend, I was getting concerned with them, but back-to-back good days from the second-year receiver, that's nice to read. But Cam was pulling people aside. He was pulling Edelman aside, and they're doing all of this side work. He's building chemistry. He's building chemistry with Devin Asiasi. He's building chemistry with Dalton Keene. He's building chemistry even with the running backs, a Damian Harris, who has reportedly been blowing up camp, especially as a receiver. He's been great during this camp, which is, again, nice to read after a wasted rookie season a year ago. So quickly winning the job allows McDaniels to build that foundation with Cam quicker than if he had to sit there and split this between Stidham and Cam. It also allows Cam the time to build that chemistry with his surrounding weapons, getting to understand what guys do best and making sure he puts them in the position to succeed. And also, you know what Cam does? When Cam walks into a room, he commands that room. He commands the room, he commands attention, and he just, he gives off that aura that he is the guy, right? I mean, he's one of the only people that would ever look at replacing Tom Brady and actually say publicly that it's a breath of fresh air. Who in the hell would say that? Replacing the greatest quarterback of all time. Some major cojones in a lot of swag and a lot of confidence, and some people would say cockiness. But the fact that Cam took this job over within 72 hours or so, it gives him more time to command the room. Now guys are looking. Edelman's post today shows us this, right? Everybody's looking at Cam as the guy now. He's the guy. He's been anointed. And as I read over the last several days of practice notes, Nick Cattles here, Sports Radio WEEI on a late night Tuesday. You know, as I read these notes, one thing that sticks out to me, another aspect of what's been happening over the past 7 to 10 days that should make Patriots fans feel really good about where Cam is right now. And it's no guarantee he's going to be healthy the entire year and he's going to light the world on fire the entire year. But right now, what has been happening at practice is that Cam is getting better and better and better every single day. He's getting better every day. He's getting more comfortable every day. And that's what you want to see. You want to see the progression because they don't have a ton of time to get this thing right. The season kicks off, 2 weeks from Thursday? I know it doesn't feel that way. We've been stuck in this COVID-19 mother-loving nightmare. It doesn't feel like opening night of the NFL season is 2 weeks away from Thursday, but it is. It's going to be here much sooner than some of you might even realize. So the Patriots don't have a ton of time to get this thing right. They don't have a ton of time to have Cam jump into this offense and figure things out and be ready for a game one. So the idea that Cam is getting better every single day, he's showing that progression, and he's getting more comfortable with the offense. Last week, I had been reading about how he's holding the football. Now, some of that is because Cam was uncomfortable with the offense, trying to figure out what he was looking for. But there was also the case to be made that the receivers weren't necessarily getting open consistently. Remember, Edelman was banged up. He missed a practice or two. N'Keal Harry was banged up. He missed a practice or two. I mean, you're working with Gunnar Olszewski, who, by the way, seems to be one of the quote-unquote stars of the first week and a half of camp. He's going to make the team, if what I read is correct. Gunnar Olszewski, we're going to be sitting there watching Gunnar, you know, play on Sundays. He's had a good camp. But when you've got Olszewski as pretty much your number one guy, you know, Sanu hasn't been killing it the last week and a half. So, you know, it was some lack of separation from the receivers, but it was also Cam trying to figure out what to do with this offense. Where was he looking? Why was he looking there? All that kind of stuff. And what you've seen is this slow progression. And the Patriots, you know, we could talk about Stidham, and we can talk about the idea that Stidham possibly could have taken this team to the playoffs. I would not have written that off, by the way. I'm not, you know, I wasn't going to throw Stidham into the waste paper basket without seeing the guy play. I didn't know what to expect from him. Sure, he could have stunk. He could have stunk to high hell. He could have stunk. But when you look at it and say, he's a second-year player. I mean, behind Brady, maybe, just maybe, this guy can be average or slightly above average. So I wasn't going to write this season off. I know a lot of people, they were tweeting at me saying, you know, at Nick C Radio, oh, you know, this is a 4-win team, this is a 5-win team. I wasn't ready to write them off. I said, well, if they can run the football, their offensive line plays well, that defense is a top 5 or 6 defense in the league, the division still isn't super, super tough. Buffalo's good. The Jets aren't that good. Miami is still very young. You still have Fitzpatrick likely starting. The AFC is thin. You've got Kansas City, then Baltimore, then everybody else. To me, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that this team could win 9 games and sneak into the playoffs. With Cam, with a healthy Cam, that is the best chance the Patriots have to win this division. The best chance to win the division, the best chance to go on a run. I'm not telling you they'll get to the Super Bowl. I'm not even going to tell you they'll get to the AFC Championship game. But the best chance for the Patriots to win 10 games, 11 games, and maybe win a playoff game or two, the best chance that they had at doing that, that accomplishing those goals, was if Cam was healthy, he was ready, and he was playing well. So here we are. He seems to be healthy. He's progressing within the offense. And there's no reason to believe by the end of month number one of this season that Cam is in some kind of a groove. And this team is much more formidable than we ever thought they would be going back 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. This is their best chance to win a division is with Cam. And if Cam is seriously healthy and he can do the things that we've seen him do in the past, then he's going to help this team tremendously. And this team will not be overlooked by anybody. And this team has the shot at the division. This team has a shot to win a playoff game or two. And who knows, lightning in a bottle, defense plays great. Maybe, you know, Baltimore's dealing with some crap. Kansas City's dealing with injuries. You don't know what can happen. But this is the best shot. And Cam changes the dynamics of this offense. And when you look at what the Patriots struggled at last year, Cam addresses a lot of those situational needs. When you look at the red zone struggles, when you look at the goal line struggles, when you look at third and short, fourth and short, when you look at all of those situational football things that we look at that tell you an offense is clicking, Cam can help in every single one of those categories because of his size, his ability to run the football. And you will see this offense do different things. And I think some people are going to embrace it. Is he going to be Brady? Of course not. He's not going to be Brady. He's a different quarterback than Brady. But if Newton is healthy, if he's healthy, and Edelman stays healthy, if things go right for this offense, this team could win 10, 11 games. With that defense, they could win 10, 11 games. Going to have to run the football, and Cam's going to have to be good to very good. But this gives the Patriots a chance. I want your thoughts. I want your thoughts on Cam. I want your thoughts about the Patriots' offense. I want your thoughts on their chances now that Julian Edelman has anointed Cam Newton as the king of the quarterback position. 617-779-7937. You can text us at 37937. Find me on Twitter at Nick C Radio. Again, it's at Nick C Radio. We'll get your Patriots reaction. And also coming up, this hour of late night on a Tuesday night with Nick Cattles, brought to you by FindMassMoney.com, in a heartbreaker, an absolute heartbreaker. In Toronto, Tampa Bay Lightning beat the Bees 4-3 in overtime after the Bees, you know, fought back to get back in this game 3-3 late in the third period. It looked like it was going to be a loss. 3-2, Tampa takes the lead. I thought the Bees didn't really have their foot on the gas. Looked like they were trying to find themselves a little bit. Down 3-2, you thought this game could be over. Then all of a sudden it changes. You're looking up. It's 3-3 going into overtime. You're saying to yourself, if the Bruins can come out and make a push in the first 4 to 5 minutes of this overtime, hey, who knows? Even though they did not play their best hockey tonight, they have a chance to go up 2-0 in this series, which is just absolutely crucial with the time frame of this series. If it goes 7, you're playing 7 games in 11 days, which to me is absurd. We'll get to that in a little bit. The reason why the Bruins lost this game tonight is because of their defensemen. And I did not think I was going to say that. Earlier today, we found out that Tampa was going to be down Ryan McDonough. That is huge. Absolutely freaking huge. McDonough, king of ice time for Tampa. Great at what he does, and you're looking at that and you're saying, they just lost one of their top horses. This is good. You feel pretty good, right? They just lost, to go along with Hedman, one of their best defensemen, right? And you're feeling pretty good. McDonough's out. You had a day or so to kind of relax, reset, be ready for game two, and you were coming in healthy, no issues that we knew of. And so I thought for sure that the Bruins would have the edge, the blue line. Well, not tonight. I thought their defensemen, most of them not good. McAvoy was fine. Okay, McAvoy was fine. But everybody else pretty much had their issues. Grizzlick was a little bit better than the other guys. But on the first goal for Tampa, you know, you've got Carlo and you have Krug getting split. You know, split, like the 7-10 split pretty much when you're bowling. They get beat on the first goal. Inexcusable. Both guys were in a position to stop the puck, and they get beat. They get beat, first goal on the board for Tampa. So that's on the D. Carlo, Krug, not good enough. Then, on the third goal of the night, I thought that goal, at least partially, because inevitably it was on Halak, which we'll get to. But Zdeno Chara did not help. Big Z did not help Halak at all, because Big Z decided to pinch, which, hey, fine. If you're going to pinch, you know, they often pinch. They're aggressive, try to keep the puck in the zone. If you're going to pinch and Chara decided to pinch, you've got to make sure you get the puck in deep. And Chara failed to get the puck in deep. So he has an aggressive pinch. He gets to the puck, right? He keeps it in the zone, but he fails to dump it in deep, which starts Tampa down the ice. So it's kind of a sloppy, soft kind of, you know, dump that he's trying to get in deep into the zone. Doesn't get it done because mission not accomplished. Tampa then, they get a chance to shoot down towards the Bees. And the second part of Chara's issue and mistake on that play, you know, again, if you're going to pinch, you got to get the puck in deep. If you don't get the puck in deep, then you've got to get coverage. You've got to get your ass back. And I know Chara is not going to win any kind of speed skating medals, okay? I understand. He's 172 years old. But man, oh man, he made the aggressive pinch. He did not dump the puck deep enough, and then he was stuck in quicksand. He couldn't really move at his own blue line. And, you know, that right there put Halak into a one-on-one situation. So the first goal, Carlo Krug not good enough. Second goal, Chara, or at least third goal, sorry. Third goal, Chara not good enough. Fourth goal, the game winner for Tampa is on Brandon Carlo. So Carlo is responsible for two of the four goals tonight. The first goal is on Carlo and Krug, and the fourth goal is on Carlo. He gets the puck. He gets the puck, and for some reason, he decides to rim it around the boards to absolutely nobody. There was no reason to rush. He could have taken his time, but for some reason, he rushes. He rushes, sloppy, Tampa gets the puck. Ipso facto, few seconds later, this game is over. So the first goal is on Carlo and Krug. The third goal could be on Chara. And the fourth goal is on Carlo. Here's Bruce Cassidy talking about that Carlo play in overtime.
First time the overtime goal, where did you see it just getting away from you guys?
Breakout execution. You know, the second period and overtime line changes. You got to be careful. So we got through that. But we had a puck all alone behind the net. We, you know, we just rimmed it to nobody. So that needs to be better. And then we, you know, recovered on the wall and tried to make a play through the middle. That got picked off. We didn't get it out. So, listen, I just think we need to manage the puck better in those situations. We didn't. It has cost us at times in the playoffs. But, you know, it started with a decision to rim the puck when there wasn't a lot of pressure, when be nice time to put out a fire and make a clean play.
He didn't say his name, but he's talking about Carlo. He didn't say the name. He didn't specifically throw the guy under the bus, but he was talking about Carlo. He was absolutely 100% talking about Brandon Carlo. He had the puck. He showed zero patience. As Cassidy said, he rims it around to absolutely nobody. Maybe he saw a ghost. I don't know. Maybe he thought somebody was over there. I have no idea what was going on. There are no fans. It's really tough. I mean, it seems to be clear to me if you have a teammate that you want to rim the puck to, you get it done. But again, Cassidy, he tells us everything we need to know about that final play and what set up the game-winning goal for Tampa. So what's really irritating about this game tonight, if you're a Bruins fan, because it was tight. It was a heart attack, just like playoff hockey usually is. I tweeted out at Nick C Radio, you know, playoff hockey is a heart attack. Playoff hockey is fun. And it is. It's a lot of fun. But what kills you are the goals that are inevitably preventable. And you saw a number of goals tonight that were preventable. If Carlo and Krug, you know, make a play on the puck or make a play on the body during that first goal for Tampa, you know, it doesn't happen. If Chara dumps the puck in deep enough, the third goal doesn't happen. If Carlo doesn't show the impatience and rims the puck around to nobody in the overtime, that fourth goal in the game winner, it doesn't happen. And also, those goals, some of those goals don't happen if Yaroslav Halak was better. See, here's the thing. You know, going back a couple of weeks ago now, about a week and a half ago, on Hart and Cattles, Nick Cattles with you here, Sports Radio WEEI on a late night Tuesday, myself and Andy, on that Saturday morning when Tuukka decided to leave the bubble, we talked about Tuukka, and of course we talked about Halak. We had Andrew Raycroft on the show, and you know, Andrew was optimistic that Halak was going to be able to do a good enough job, and you know, this team could still go on a run if their top line played as well as they could and Pasternak returned. Because remember, as of that Saturday, we didn't know if Pasta was going to be back. So, you know, Raycroft was saying, you know, Halak's good enough if you've got your top six playing, because the second line, for the most part, has been excellent this postseason. If you've got your second line cranking and your first line, Pasta, comes back, Halak's good enough. Halak's good enough to help you make a run. But here's the thing. When you're talking about a number two goalie, you're talking about some inconsistencies. And Halak's inconsistency tonight killed the Bruins. Because he made some very good saves. He made some very good saves. There was a redirect. I have no idea how the hell he made the save. There was a kick save at one point. I don't know if it was against Kucherov or not. I think it was. But he made a really nice kick save at one point. He made some very good saves. And you go back to game one in the second period. I talked about this last night. In the second period of game one on Sunday night, Halak was fantastic. He stopped all 18 shots. He was excellent. But every once in a while, a puck trickles on through. And tonight, you didn't have only one puck trickle on through. You had two pucks trickle on through. Two pucks right through the five hole. Softies. And you can't give up softies in a Stanley Cup playoff game. You know, you might be able to get away with one of them every once in a while, but you cannot give up two soft-ass goals between your legs. You can't have the five hole wide open, inviting Tampa to take a shot. And that's what happened. So, you had the perfect storm tonight. You had your defensemen not playing well enough. Carlo, Krug, Chara, then Carlo again. And then your goalie could not save your defenseman's ass. He was unable to make up for some of the mistakes. Because you had the mistakes up front, and then inevitably, like on that Chara play, you know, Chara makes the bad play by not getting it in deep, right? He doesn't get the puck in deep, doesn't race back, can't get his feet and his legs moving. But Halak had a chance. Halak had a chance to stop it. And what ends up happening is it just trickles on through the five hole. Like Billy Madison, just a little tap, tap, tappy. Little tap, tap, tappy. Little tappy right through the five hole of Halak. And now what we have on our hands is, I think, the possibility of an unmitigated disaster. Because for some reason, and I don't really know why this is happening, maybe it's because they don't want to have these guys go bubble stir crazy. But for some reason, the NHL, in all of their wisdom, is going to ask Tampa and Boston to come back tomorrow night to play game three. So, you know, 22 hours or so, 21 hours or so after game two ends, you're right back on the ice to play game three. And that, to me, is madness. Madness. Why in the world are you playing a back-to-back in the Stanley Cup playoff? What are we doing here? You know, maybe I understand. Maybe if it's like a game six and then seven situation because you want to get to the next round. But game two and then game three the next day? I don't get it. I have no idea why you have a back-to-back in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoff. And now the Bruins, who have the team that is much older, you know, before the playoffs began, I said one of the things that I was concerned about was the age of this roster. Because if you're playing a condensed playoff and you're asking these guys to come back and play on shorter rest, that could be an issue. You've got Krejci, you've got Bergeron, you've got Chara, you've got all these guys, you've got Halak, you've got all of these critical pieces. Marchand, you've got all of these critical pieces who are in their 30s. And of course, when you talk about Chara, in their 40s. So now you're asking this aged roster to come back in 21 hours and play their second hockey game in two nights. It's just, I don't like it. I don't like it for the Bees. And I especially don't like it now that Tuukka's not in the bubble. Because not only are you asking your aging roster to come back 21 hours after they just played an overtime game, but you're also asking, most likely, I would think it's Halak out there, you're asking your backup goalie to go back out there in 21 hours after he let not one but two pucks slide on through that five hole.
Just tap it in. Just tap it in. Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
That's all Tampa had to do tonight on two of their goals. Just a little tap, tap, tap-a-roo. Right through that five hole. Just a little tap, tap, tappy. And so now after giving up the two tap, tap, tappy goals through the five hole, you've got Halak coming back, I think, in 21 hours to try to be better. Here was Bruce Cassidy tonight talking about the back-to-back.
Sometimes it's good, Emily, to get right back at it when you lose a hockey game. You know, we'll see tomorrow if that's good for us. You saw their energy early on. They had good push. Usually after a loss, you have that. You know, they may be riding a high and go, you know, build off that because, you know, they even the series. So that's a tough one sometimes to answer. Minutes-wise, you know, we were pretty good, I thought, balanced going into the overtime. Obviously, only a five-minute overtime. So that part was good. I don't think anybody had to go. No injuries, so, you know, we didn't really have to double shift anybody. So that part of our recovery should be okay.
Should be. Cross your fingers. Hope. Hope is what you got. Nick Cattles here, Sports Radio WEEI, late night on a Tuesday night. Here are some good things. Because, you know, we talked about a lot of the bad. Here are some good things and maybe why you should feel somewhat optimistic going into tomorrow night. I don't think your defensemen can play worse than they played tonight, honestly. I don't think you'll see Carlo, Krug, and Chara all play bad tomorrow night. So that's the first thing. I would expect an uptick from the defensemen tomorrow night in game three. You also feel really good about this top line. You know, the top line, and then Sean Corrali came in. The top line, and then with a mixture of Corrali, they had an incredible shift late in the third period that ended up in the game-tying goal to make it 3-3 and push this into overtime tonight. That top line, and then eventually Corrali, fantastic shift. And they showed a ton of fight. I mean, Corrali down on the ice, getting back up. Marchand down on the ice, getting back up. That fight, retrieving the puck, keeping the puck in the zone, fighting off multiple Lightning. Corrali with a great pass to Marchand to bury the game-tying shot. So, you know, when you look at the top line, their level of play, they've stepped it up. And I thought Marshy was great all night long. He was great all night. He had fire in his ass. His compete level was there. You know, whether it was fighting for pucks up against the boards, whether it was keeping puck possession when he shouldn't have, but somehow, some way, finding a way to keep the puck in the zone. He had two goals, one on the power play, and man, what a pass by Pasta. That power play goal, Vasilevsky was 100% playing Pasta for the shot. He had the perfect pass right towards the left of, that sounded funny, right towards the left, to the left of Vasilevsky. Marchand kind of, you know, set his feet up perfectly in a V form. Puck goes right in the net. I thought Marshy was excellent tonight. He was really, really good. And, of course, the second line continues to play well. You know, sometimes I'll get a little frustrated by Kasha. You know, he'll make a play with the puck I don't really understand. But for the most part, that second line's been nails. So, again, you've got the top two lines playing well. Corrali had a good night tonight. You could pretty much always be optimistic about Coyle, and he'll be able to show up. So you should feel good about that. I thought tonight, when you're watching this game, if you were to talk about from the beginning to the end, on balance, Tampa was the better team. Tampa was the better team tonight on balance. It was close in some spots. The Bruins, I thought, controlled a few stretches of play. But overall, when you take a look at all of the hockey that was played tonight, I thought Tampa was the better team. And they came out with urgency tonight. They came out and looked like a team that understood, if we lose this freaking game, we're down 2-0, and we got to come back in less than 24 hours to play a game 3. We could be looking at, within, you know, 27 hours, we could be looking at a 3-0 series deficit. And as good as we feel like we are, we know we're not beating this Bruins team 4 games in a row. And that's how Tampa came out tonight. They came out with urgency. They came out like the team that understood clearly that they needed this win. They needed this game. They knew it right off the bat. Shot out of a cannon. And I give the Bruins some credit. You know, when you look at their forwards, you got to give them credit. This game wasn't on, you know, the top line. It wasn't on the second line. It wasn't on any of the lines. It wasn't on the forwards. This game was on the defensemen, and it was on Halak with those two softies. I thought the rest of the Bruins, they scrapped. So they got to clean some stuff up. Their defensemen have to play better, and Halak's got to be more consistent. And again, he's got to fix the tap, tap, tap a roll. Because if he continues to let pucks slide through the 5-hole, the Bruins will be back here in Boston sooner than later. And none of us want that. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. 37937 is the text line. You can also follow me on Twitter, Nick Cattles, at Nick C Radio. All right, we've talked Pats, we've talked Bruins. You can give us a phone call and talk about any of those two teams if you would like at 617-779-7937. But also coming up next, I want to get to the Celtics, because is it actually a possibility that this game won on Thursday night between the Raptors and the Celtics, is it possible that game doesn't get played? We'll have the very latest for you. It's Nick Cattle, Sports Radio WEEI, late night on a Tuesday.
93.7 FM, WEEI.
Sports Radio WEEI, late night on a Tuesday. Nick Cattles with you here for another half hour or so, leading you up to midnight. Thanks for joining us as always. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. You can text us at 37937. You can follow me on Twitter as well at Nick C Radio. We've talked Pats. We've talked Bees. Now I want to talk a little bit about the Celtics, and actually more about the circumstances surrounding a possible Game 1 on Thursday. See, Thursday, we're supposed to have Game 1 Seas versus Raptors. But now the question is, will a game actually happen? And why are we asking that question? Well, earlier today, ESPN reported, after a lot of the Toronto Raptors spoke with the media, Fred VanVleet was out there talking to the media. Norman Powell, I believe, also spoke with the media. There had been some word about a boycott. And the idea that the Raptors had a meeting today, and during that meeting, a lot of different things were being discussed about what happened with Jacob Blake, which we'll get into in a minute. But a lot of things were being discussed about how to handle the most recent ugly, ugly video that had surfaced. And one of the things that were on the table was boycotting the game on Thursday night. So Jacob Blake, if you've been living under a rock and you haven't heard of this story or saw this story, I'll give you an update here. He's a 29-year-old black man. He was shot 7 times in the back by police in Wisconsin. Now, he was reaching into his car, and again, his back was towards the police officer, and the police officer shot him in the back. And, you know, 7 times. And, you know, I don't know how many times we've got to see this thing play out on video to understand what's going on. Not everybody is racist. Not everybody, you know, that is a police officer is a bad cop. I understand that. Not every single situation is the person that gets shot doing exactly what they, quote unquote, should be doing or following orders, whatever you want to say. But there's no justification for shooting a man 7 times. No justification when that man's back is towards you. And what makes this even worse is that Blake's children were there. So not only was Jacob Blake shot 7 times with his back towards the cop, and I was actually watching a video earlier today of, you know, somebody who was actually walking towards a cop and yelling at that cop, and the cop had their gun drawn, and they're not shooting. They're actually backing away with the gun. There's this big white dude kind of walking towards the cop, telling the cop to shut up, and she's really not doing anything. And, you know, meanwhile, it's just this juxtaposition, right? You have a video like that versus the video of Blake that came out. And, you know, off the heels of what's happening in this country with George Floyd in late May in Minneapolis, and all these other things that we've seen, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, all of the names, all of this stuff that's happened, this Jacob Blake video for the players in the bubble, for many of them, had almost a feeling of this is, you know, the final straw that's going to break the camel's back, so to speak. Shot 7 times in the back by a police officer. Guy was reaching into his car. His children were on the scene. Blake is currently paralyzed, his dad says, from the waist down. He fortunately and luckily did not die from the shooting. But this had a lot of NBA players rattled. And one of those players was George Hill, Milwaukee Bucks guard. Listen to what he had to say yesterday.
Man, we can't do anything. First of all, we shouldn't even came to this damn place, to be honest. I think coming here just took all the focal points off of what the issues are. But we're here, so it is what it is. You know, we can't do anything from right here. But I think definitely when this all settles, you know, some things need to be done. I think this world has to change. I think our police department has to change. Us as a society has to change. And right now we're not seeing any of that. You know, lives are being taken, you know, as we speak day in and day out. And there's no consequence or accountability for it. And that's what has to change.
I mean, there's a player who has a chance to get to an NBA Finals with the Bucks, and he's asking the question, you know, what are we doing here? Like, we should not even be in this bubble. You can hear the passion in his voice. You can hear almost the guilt that he feels for being in the bubble. So these conversations continued today with other teams, including, again, the Raptors and even the Celtics, and boycotting was on the table for the Raptors and might still be on the table for the Raptors. As far as the Celtics go and how their conversations went over the last 24 hours or so, here's Marcus Smart.
Are there conversations with guys on other teams, either through the union or maybe just guys you see in the bubble, that you feel like you guys are networking, organizing, and maybe coming up with some ways you want to make change once you get out of here?
Guys have been talking. We haven't seen much more of other guys from teams. You know, obviously the playoffs are kind of doing our respective teams, but, you know, it's definitely chatter going around here. You know, people are upset, people are pissed, you know, people are fed up. And like I said, it's just sad that we still have to be going through this and still fight for something that's so obvious, that racism. It's the obvious fact that it shouldn't be there, and we shouldn't have to go through it, but yeah, we're still going through it. So there's definitely been talks and chatter. You know, nothing's written in stone. Everybody's kind of gave suggestions and what they would like. Boycott was one of those. And so, you know, we're just trying to work and see how we can really use our voice and our platform to make more of an effort to get something done.
So again, Smart, Nick Cattles here, by the way, Sports Radio WEEI Late Night on a Tuesday. They're Smart saying, yeah, boycott was on the table. Boycott was one of the things that have been discussed across the league by players. And so you've got to wonder, you know, could this game actually be boycotted? I mean, should this game actually be boycotted? What does that mean? What does that mean for the NBA? What does that mean for the Raptors and the Celtics? Are we talking about a one-game boycott? Are we talking about a 2-3-4 game? Are we talking about boycotting the entire series? Or is this just a one-game boycott to send the message? So what do you do? If the Raptors decide they want to boycott this game on Thursday night, what happens if the Celtics decide they don't want to boycott the game? Does that mean the Raptors are going to forfeit? Do they get a loss because they don't show up to the game in the bubble? Do the Raptors talk to the Celtics and see if the Celtics want to get involved? You know, do they say, all right, listen, you know, we want to boycott this game, but we're not going to boycott this game unless you're going to boycott this game. And then you've got the Celtics making the decision when they haven't even discussed it, according to the people on their team, like as a team. Again, Smart was talking about the league and all the other discussions that have been happening. But as a team, the Celtics, they really haven't looked towards the boycott option. Brad Stevens earlier today said, you know, no, that really hasn't come up for us. It hasn't come up yet. So, you know, if the Raptors say we want to boycott this damn game and they go to the Celtics and the Celtics don't want to boycott it, will the Celtics give in and decide, hey, we're going to boycott it? We're going to stand with Toronto because, you know, what's going on in this country is more important than what could happen on this basketball court? I have no idea. And what happens if both teams boycott the game? Do you just simply delay the series? Do you push it back? What if you want to boycott multiple games? How does that affect the rest of the league? Like, so, you know, this could end up being chaos for the NBA. Now, I don't know if that's what's going to end up happening, but it could be chaos for them. And I'm sure that's not something they want to deal with right now. They're trying to get through this season as is, and they've done a really good job dealing with all of the circumstances during COVID-19 and everything else, and guys not happy that their families aren't there, and, you know, dudes trying to escape for chicken wings at one point at the beginning of this thing. With all the craziness going on, they've been able to fight through, and they've had some good basketball. And now, you know, less than 48 hours before a second-round series is set to begin, you've got one team saying that they could end up boycotting. Now, a couple of things about this idea of the boycott and what's going to happen. You know, I saw Chris Mannix today tweet out that, and I'm paraphrasing, but he tweeted out that the players were, you know, they kind of felt shattered, I believe his word was, because they thought what they had done inside the bubble and, you know, the jerseys and Black Lives Matter on the court and, you know, some of the commercials and advertising that we've seen during these playoff games, they thought there was going to be substantive change. And they thought that substantive change was going to happen quicker than it has. And, you know, listen, I think their intent is great. I think they mean well. But if you thought wearing messages on the backs of your jerseys, painting Black Lives Matter on a basketball court, having pregame ceremonies and protests, and having all of these commercials aired during the games, if you thought that that was going to turn everything around in this country, then you were being naive. You have a great platform, and you're able to reach a lot of people, and you are able to make a difference. But if you thought that your effort down in Orlando in that bubble, if you thought your effort was going to result in turning the momentum of 400 years of racism, then yeah, you were being a little naive. You know, this is going to be a long road. It's going to be a lot of work. And I don't know what they were expecting. I don't know if they thought they were going to wake up and there was going to be no more, you know, police brutality or shootings or, you know, racism. And I don't know what they expected, but it seems to me they might be shooting just a little bit too high for a goal if they thought there was going to be this huge shift within the racist world. Like, you know, wearing some messages on the backs of your jerseys and, you know, doing what you're doing, that is not going to change the minds and hearts of racists. It's just not. And 400 years of this built up. Secondly, I don't know how much impact the boycott's going to have. Like, if the Raptors and the Celtics boycott the game on Thursday night, how much impact does that have in this country? Is it going to bring any kind of change? Now, maybe you could argue that the sponsors would be rattled. Maybe they'd put more money towards things. And maybe that money and maybe the TV stuff would help. You might be able to argue that point, to at least debate it. But honestly, do we think that the Toronto Raptors boycotting a second round NBA playoff game is going to change the momentum in this country? Is going to shift this country towards a different path? Now, I'm not telling you, again, the whole country is racist and all that stuff. As I said from the beginning, not everybody is racist. Not every cop is bad. Don't generalize. Don't try to put me in a box on the left or the right. Don't do that crap. Look at this objectively. Racism does exist, for sure. Police brutality does exist, for sure. And, you know, racism obviously has been a problem for 400 plus years. So I understand the legitimacy of all of this, and I get it. And I hate seeing these videos as much as anybody. But I don't know if the Raptors boycotting a game is going to change much. Because I think many of the people that watch the NBA playoffs, they're on the same page as these players. You know, if you're watching these games and you're watching them kneel before the games during the anthem, and if you're watching these games with the Black Lives Matter on the court painted on there, and you're watching these games with the messages on the backs of jerseys, and you're watching these games to listen to the post-game interviews when Breonna Taylor and everybody else is brought up, I think the vast majority of people watching these games are on the same page as these NBA players. So the demographics that you need to reach to truly create change, I don't know if you're going to impact those specific demographics by boycotting a basketball game. Now, I don't know if those, you know, I don't know if racists and people that have hate in their hearts, I don't know if they're watching NBA action right now. So I don't know how much a boycott would affect things. I mean, inevitably, I think we're going to have a game on Thursday night. I think we will have the Raptors and the Celtics. But who knows, man? 2020. Who knows? 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. You can follow me on Twitter at Nick C Radio. We'll wrap it all up coming up next. It's Sports Radio WEEI Late Night with Nick Cattles on a Tuesday.
This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network. WEEI 93.7 FM.
Nick Cattle, Sports Radio WEEI on a Tuesday night. Thanks for joining me. Just a few more minutes left. And, you know, some good, some bad tonight. The most important game of the night, of course, the Bruins. They lose in overtime against Tampa, 4-3. Defensemen did not play well enough. Carlo and Krug beat on the first goal. Chara on the third goal. You know, he did not get the dump deep enough into the zone when he pinched. And, you know, when Tampa turned that into offense, Chara couldn't move. And myself and Nick LaPan, who's producing this fine program tonight, if I do say so myself, we were just talking during the break about, you know, how much Chara is playing. And I think it's rather obvious to everybody. You know, Chara is just, he's not nearly the same guy. And there's not much gas in the tank at this point. And he played about 17 and a half minutes tonight. Of course, they went into overtime. I don't know how much he played through the first three periods, 16-ish. So, you know, he's not going to play 20-plus minutes anymore. And, you know, he's not taking the big shots that he would take from time to time from the point, let one loose. He's really got zero offense. And I'm not saying that he was, you know, one of these offensive defensemen, right? He's not Torrey Krug and Grizzlick and skating like a gazelle and trying to get shots off and Chucky. He's not one of those guys. But, you know, every once in a while he'd let a bomb go. He doesn't even really do that. And so, you know, it's somewhat tough to watch Chara during these days try to fight through it. And I think that's the best way you could describe it. He's trying to fight through it. He did take a puck off the foot slash ankle slash leg somewhere in the foot region tonight. And he actually showed visible pain, which he never does, which tells me that it was a really bad shot he took. But, you know, defensemen did not play well enough tonight. Halak did not play well enough tonight. He let two get through the five hole. Inexcusable in a game like this. The Red Sox did win. Red Sox won in Buffalo against Toronto. Still very weird to say that. But Alex Verdugo, you know, if you're looking for a silver lining this season, because there hasn't been many of them, and as the Red Sox trade inevitably some guys before next week, they're probably going to be even less silver linings. One silver lining, Verdugo can play some baseball. I think they got a good one in Alex Verdugo. So, nice. Young guy, cost controllable, does a lot of good things. Extended his hitting streak to 14 games tonight. So, Verdugo's a good one. Thanks to Nick LaPan. He's a good one. Great job on the show tonight, my man. Everybody, have a good night. We're back tomorrow, back at it. We'll talk about, of course, Bruins Game 3 tomorrow night. What do they do to come back from tonight's tough loss? We'll have some Red Sox trade wins talk. I'm sure we'll talk about the Patriots, Celtics. A lot to get to tomorrow night. Till then, Nick Cattle, Sports Radio, WEEI Late Night on a Tuesday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.